God.
Why?
Why?
I'm not.
Welcome to Why I'm Not with Brant Penvidik, the podcast that explores the latest trends, fads, beliefs, and addictions from all sides, and tries to remind you, before you judge it, try to understand it. After that, you're on your own. This week, Why I'm Not a Good Parent. And now, from AfterBuzz Studios, here's your host, Brant Penvidik.
I'm a father of three. Boy, girl, boy, age 16, 13, 11. And I consider myself a good dad. You know what? I actually consider myself a great dad. But I'm not sure I can say I'm a great parent. And there is a difference. I can tell you that my father, growing up, did not spend every single day, all day, trying to figure out how to make me happy. I kind of do that with my kids. My dad spent a lot of time teaching me important life lessons like self-reliance, or actually better stated, my dad allowed me to explore the world on my own and learn valuable lessons for myself. So I think that sometimes I learned those lessons the hard way, but I think that was good for me as a kid. And I can't say I'm able to do that for my kids. And to be honest, I can't say that most of the people that I know or my friends are doing that either. And I'm wondering if that's the right way to parent. While it feels good to be a super dad or a super mom, and you're always there for your kids, and you're there for their needs, and you bond with them, and blah, 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 does that really prep them for the realities of life? Because life's not easy. How hard should I be pushing my kids in sports, in academics? And how hard should I be pushing my kids to figure out the realities of life to come? Don't know. So that's what we're going to get to today. I've got a lot of great guests that are going to be coming in to help me sort out these issues and shine some light on the parenting style that I have and the parenting style that I think our new generation has. I'm going to bring in author Maya Thiagarjan. She's the author of Beyond the Tiger Mom, an East-West Parenting for the Global Age. She's going to talk about the benefits of pushing kids that Tiger Mom style and discussing what the differences are between Eastern and Western philosophies, and they're pretty big. I've got Christina Chu, a premier-level college admissions counselor at Ivywise. Now, this is a former assistant director of undergraduate admissions at both Yale and Georgetown University. So she knows what it takes to get to the highest level of these sort of universities and colleges. And I'm interested to get a perspective on what I'm doing. And my special guest in the studio today, I'm very excited. I go one-on-one with the one and only Todd Marinovich. This is a man who is the poster child for helicopter parenting. He was raised in a rigorous childhood of football training that led him to the USC record books, to the cover of Sports Illustrated, and to the NFL with huge high hopes. But once he was there and out of his parents' grasps, unfortunately, it sort of lost a lot in the whirlwind of drugs and bad decisions. Now, his story is awe-inspiring and a little bit heartbreaking, and you do not want to miss it. So let's get to it. This is the Why I'm Not podcast. I'm Brant Penvidik, and this is Why I'm Not a Good Parent. All right, welcome to the Why I'm Not podcast, the show where we explore the latest topics, trends, fads, and anything that gets people seriously hyped up, and we try to explain why they get so into things. My motto, as always, is before I judge, I try to understand it. Now, I've learned the hard way many times that just because I don't understand something doesn't mean that I'm the smart one. Usually, it's I'm the dumbass, and I'm not the righteous one. And when I speak of the righteous one, I'm always talking about my co-host to the left, but I have a new co-host today. This is very exciting.
It is very exciting.
All right, so my co-host to the left, and I'm pretty excited about this guy, he is the president of Studio 71. He has the keys to my heart. He's one of my best friends. Ladies and gentlemen, Rabih Ghulam.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. How are you, buddy?
Very good, buddy. Very excited to be here.
Now, listen, what's crazy is you're also a fellow parent of three.
I am.
And you're a few years younger than me.
It's true.
So you can learn by some of my mistakes and maybe save yourself some of the things that I've screwed up. Or follow my brilliant lead. I'm not even sure how to do that yet. We're going to find out.
Well, you know, a lot of our conversations are about your kids, because I'm interested, because they are like 5 years older than mine.
That's correct.
And I'm always worried about, this is like the easy part there. My kids are 8, 6, and 4. and it's still really fun, really easy, and, you know, whatever. They do some things that are, you know, they misbehave sometimes, but Brant's in a whole new world.
I'm in a world here. So.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what people think about your parenting style.
I know. And also joining me in the studio today, as always, the producer, large and in charge, well, figuratively speaking anyways, Christian Blatt. How are you today?
Figuratively large and figuratively in charge. Hello, Brant. Right. Happy to be here. I'm also a parent of an 18-month-old baby boy named Felix. It's really good that Roxy is not here because parenting, children, not her strong
suit. And she creeps right out of it.
Yeah.
But she's traveling. She actually, it's not like we excluded her.
Right. She actually didn't understand once when I explained sort of some logistics as to why I couldn't be where we needed to be at a certain time. She's like, well, you can't even leave your kid home alone for half an hour? I'm like, no.
That's not how it works.
What about 5 minutes? I'm like, no, a lot can happen in 5 minutes. And she still, I think, to this day doesn't get it.
Yeah.
But she pretends she does.
Well, listen, and you're in a very early stage of parenting, yes. So your advice is pretty well worthless at this point, which is
no,
totally
no.
Fine.
Look, I'm here to soak it up. Yeah. He's talking about how you're ahead of the curve. You guys all know so much more than me. And, you know, I'm happy to learn from the Jedi Masters.
All right. Well, Ruby, you do know me well, and you know I'm a very intense person. And I'm a super involved dad, right?
Right.
And I'd like to say, you know, I'm kind, I'm giving, I encourage my kids. I do that unconditionally. I don't believe in participation trophies. I'm not that kind of, you know, hippie type parent at all, right?
That's right.
But if I'm being honest, I do that mostly the way I am with my kids and bonding with the kids and all the fun stuff we do is because it feels really good to have a good relationship with them.
Right.
And I would love to say it's the best parenting style, but it's the parenting style that I like the most. And so I'm a little at odds with that to wonder if it's something that is really good for them, or I'd like to believe it's good for them because it works for me and I like having this great relationship, right? So I've decided today we're going to look at this in an honest way from both sides and really get an understanding of what it means for our kids' futures and what parenting is all about. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It does make sense. Listen, it's very complicated, this parenting thing. So who knows if there's a right or wrong way, but let's focus on you today and your parenting style, and let's see what our guests have to say.
I'm very excited about that. Yeah. So would you like me to tell you a little story how we get here today?
I would love that.
Okay, so it's story time, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to tell you how we came to this topic today. And it's kind of funny because I moved to the United States 13 years ago from Canada. Very excited. One of my biggest things was I love the sort of rah-rah win, pep rally, college sports stuff of the United States. So when I moved here, my son was 2 years old. And one of the things I always thought was like, oh man, now he can get a sports scholarship. He can do anything. They give sports scholarships in the United States for everything. Jump rope, basket weaving, doesn't matter, right? Because Americans love to win. So, you know, my kid was not athletically gifted at all growing up. He had a giant head. He was premature. He grew fast. He was awkward. I had to tell people, no, he's not sort of slow. He's actually only 4 years old. But we were, when about nine, he started to grow back into his body and come along. So we were water skiing up at our lake place. And this kid was 9 years old. My son was 9 years old. And he picked up water skiing so fast. And he was on slalom ski. And he was doing amazing. I have a video here. You can see a little bit. Like, I mean, amazing at 9 years old. Yeah. So I thought to myself, you know what? This could be the golden opportunity. California, nobody water skis in California, so there's not going to be a lot of competition. Mm-hmm. And even in the country, like, water skiing is kind of off, but there are a lot of schools that you can get a scholarship for, and you could be on the water ski team. So I thought, he could almost be a professional. It's really a thing,
right?
But not like trying to compete at a football level or whatever. Right. So I'm so excited about this. But I'm thinking to myself, man, do I want to donate my life to training this kid and putting him in all the stuff and sending him to camps and driving up every weekend? And I wrestled with the idea of would I be able to do this and would I be able to sacrifice my life for the opportunity for this kid.
Right.
And so I went to YouTube and I typed in 9-year-old water ski prodigy.
Right.
And that was the end of the discussion.
Oh, boy.
It was over right there. Have a look. This is what a 9-year-old water ski prodigy actually looks like. That's not my son. So that ended that for good. I never thought of again.
Yeah.
And that stuck with me because we've never pushed athletics. And that brings me to my question of the day and what we're going to discuss today.
Yes.
I believe that my parenting style and my sort of connection with the kids and how I am with them and how I don't push them. We expect lots from them, but I don't push them too hard.
Mm-hmm.
We don't push them into organized athletics overly aggressively. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of weird fun stuff. I rock climb and do stuff with them. And I make the excuse that they're learning all these other stuff. But what I can guarantee is I haven't pushed them in athletics. I haven't pushed them in academics hard whatsoever. And the question is have I cost my son a shot at an Ivy League education? Mm-hmm. Because he needed a push early if that was going to happen, and I didn't give it to him.
Right.
It's not because he doesn't have the brains or the ability. He could.
Yeah.
But without the parenting to push it, I feel like I've robbed him of that. Yeah. Could you understand that?
Let's find out.
Yeah.
Because the answer is probably yes. The answer is probably yes, you have.
Wow.
But, you know, who knows, had you tried to give them an Ivy League education, maybe it wouldn't have worked out either. So,
and listen, I do hear that a lot when I bring that up, is that, oh, well, if he really wanted, he would have found his way. Sure. Or if I would have pushed him, he might not have found his way. Sure.
Right.
But I can guarantee, and we're going to get to Christine in a minute, I can almost guarantee that now I have taken that option off the table. Because of the way Kalis's personality is, he would have needed a push, a constant push.
Right.
And I didn't want to be that dad.
Yeah.
And so that option is now off the table, I think.
Yeah.
But
I think it's probably too late.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that. Wow.
I think it's probably too late.
I was hoping for someone to say it's never too late.
No.
You haven't robbed your kid of this golden thing called education.
But can I go back to one thing?
Yes.
I thought you were going to say when you were talking about the story about the water skiing.
Yeah.
you didn't go to YouTube, that you went on the computer and you looked up water skiing scholarships in the United States and realized that really there are none and no one gives water skiing scholarships.
That's not true. You can. There are water ski schools all over the place and professional teams and they'll give you scholarships 100%.
Oh,
and sponsors and everything.
All right. Well, you're going to edit this out.
He's just not good enough anyway. Okay. So, but that was a whole other thing.
It's very funny.
So, you know what I wanted to figure out though is as I wrestle with a little bit of the guilt of this is that could I help myself feel better if it was like, wow, I couldn't have given him that opportunity anyways. So I wanted to find out what it would take to actually prepare for an Ivy League college sort of run.
Right.
So I brought in Christina Chu. She's on the line right now. I'm going to Skype her in here in 1 second here. She is a premier level college admissions counselor. She's at IVY, and that's literally what they do. You hire them to help get your kids into the best colleges. She's been there at Yale and at Georgetown, so she knows everything. So if we have her, let's bring her up. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm excited to ask you some questions. So you're basically someone who you get hired to help guide the admissions process to fancy schools, yes?
Partly correct. I would say that not just fancy schools, all schools that are good fits for our students. So
all good. Okay.
Maybe some fancy, maybe not so fancy. So,
if you want to go to an average school, that works too.
Yes. We work with students and families and making sure that we find the good fits for them. So it might be, more selective schools, but not for all of our students.
Okay. So from what I know from my sort of education in Canada about what schools are like in the United States now that I'm here, I want my son to go to Harvard or Yale or Princeton.
Mm-hmm.
Can you make that happen for me?
Can your son make it happen for himself? I can help and guide the process, but really, it's really the student who's doing the work. They have to make the grades. They have to do the activities, make themselves stand out, and I can help advise and guide and provide helpful information, some tips about what to do and not to do, but I cannot make it happen if
let's go to what the sort of the requirements are. Let's say we were applying to Princeton or Yale or Harvard. My son has about a 3.75 grade point average, but all in regular classes. He didn't want to take AP classes and we let him not do that because he could get A's in the regular classes. He plays a little volleyball, not fancy volleyball, and he doesn't really belong to any other special clubs or anything like that. And he's finishing up 10th grade. So is it too late for him to get into one of these fancy schools?
I think the odds are pretty low, but it's, I can't say it's absolutely zero. It depends. He still has time in 11th grade and a little bit of 12th grade. So for a student who probably is not taking the most rigorous courses available, doing fairly well in that load, mix of A's and B's, and they're involved, but, just kind of a team player rather than something totally distinguishing. I would say that it has to be something pretty extraordinary. So I can't say that students can accomplish something amazing, really, truly extraordinary in the next, 18 to 24 months. But for most students with that profile, the odds are pretty low, I would say. Yeah.
And so, okay, so I'm facing mm-hmm. the reality of that. But my youngest son, mm-hmm. he's only 11. Mm-hmm. So what sort of things would he actually have to start doing if I, say, wanted to get into one of the Ivy League schools at age 11? Like, what sort of training would he have to start doing and watching for?
Right. So that's a great question. So 11, he's in the seventh grade, in middle school probably?
Yeah, he's going into sixth.
Okay, great. Okay, so sixth grade. I would say, at this stage really is just to develop, good habits, study habits, develop, I think, persistent. Research shows one of the greatest qualities is just grit. If you stick with something, even when it's hard, even when you fail, in the long term, you'll meet with success. So I think that's just really just basic kind of developing good qualities. Also just cultivating, sense of enjoyment of studying, something that he enjoys studying, if it's math, if it's science, if it's English, history, languages, whatever it may be. For college admission purposes, things don't really start to count until they start high school, so ninth grade. So at this stage is really early. It's really just for him to, figure out what he enjoys and what he does not enjoy. And same goes for the non-academics. So if he likes playing a sport, if he likes music, if he wants to do theater, if he wants to do service, get started, try it out. If he likes it, great, do more. If he doesn't, try something else. So this is a really good time to explore and, figure out what he's interested in.
Listen, that sounds pretty good. Mm-hmm. I have to say, I do feel like you're sugarcoating it a little bit. Because if I'm applying to Yale or Harvard, how hard is it to get in? Like, what are the odds if everybody, because my understanding is like everybody's got a 7.3 grade point average and they were the captain of the debate club and the captain of the Young Red Cross traveling circus. Like, they've got all of these lists of things, and even those kids don't get in.
Yeah. So, well, if you look up the statistics, it's probably less than 6% these days. They're about to announce, this year's incoming freshman class. So you'll see the fresh new statistics, but probably somewhere likely less than 10%, less than 6 or 7%. That's the overall admit rate. So this is like the tenth of thousand students who apply.
Whoa, hold on a second. You're telling me it's only like 6% of all the students that apply?
Right. Yeah.
To that school.
Yeah. But then, not everybody's,
my God,
quote unquote, qualified. So if you really look at the students, I don't have this, exact percentage of students with straight A's and, really good test scores who are captain of this, football, leader of that, so I don't have stats for that. But I assume that, for the really, really qualified students who are really strong, qualified is such a fuzzy
word. I get it.
It's probably going to be a little bit higher, so it's not quite, the dire 6% that you hear about in the newspapers, et cetera. But it is very, very, very competitive. These schools are looking, they are looking for students who are a bit extraordinary. And that's what I advise students to, follow your passion, be an expert, be pointy. If it's juggling, join the circus and juggle. If it's academics, science, be the scientist, and win a science competition. So really to pursue what they love to do.
But would you suggest that I try to make my kid extraordinary now that I've lost my 16-year-old? If I go to my 11-year-old, I try to make him extraordinary? Because what I'm hearing is, mm-hmm. if I got him to be extraordinary and he got straight A's on the mm-hmm. AP level courses mm-hmm. and did all these extracurricular things and got recommendations and letters from fancy people, mm-hmm. his mm-hmm. acceptance rate at that school, at the Ivy League school, is probably still less than 20% chance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's really what I'm looking at?
Yeah. Well, you're talking about a very, very selective, literally less than a handful of schools with those statistics. And I think, being extraordinary, everybody loves to, sort of aim, Harvard or Princeton or Yale.
Yes.
Or MIT. But I think there's so many great schools out there. And, success in life isn't determined by the fact that you went to Harvard. Sure, it might help a little bit. But, if you look at all the successful people out there, Oprah Winfrey and Steve Jobs and Warren Buffett, they didn't, go to Harvard, Yale, Princeton, MIT,
Listen,
and Stanford.
I didn't go to any of those schools either.
Yeah, oh, and there are plenty of people who've done very well in life. So I think, you know, extraordinary, this, how do you, you know, the definition. So yes, there's a little bit of a perspective.
But you said, this sounds like exactly what you would tell a parent just like me who says, hey, can you get my kid into Harvard? Well, maybe they should focus on things they like more. And there's lots of great schools. So, I mean, my theory going into this was I've cost my kid a shot at an Ivy League school because I don't push them very hard academically. I let them sort of enjoy life a little bit more, and they see that from me. And so whether my kid wants one or thinks that's a great opportunity, it's too late now because he doesn't have parents that are going to make it even plausible, let alone the odds that I'm facing.
Well, I wouldn't say it's too late. You really do want to take a, you know, longer perspective. In, I mean, just for an example, I'm being very practical here, but some students, you know, they're late bloomers, or they come into their, you know, whatever a little bit later, but they get into college and they realize, like, you know what, I really love studying. I want to do more of this. And some students transfer and they are very successful in that process. Some students, even later, they realize, gosh, I want to go to medical school and I didn't even do any pre-med requirements in college. So they do a post-bac, fulfill their pre-med requirements and go on to medical school. So there's graduate school and there's plenty of stuff to do if they want to do more studying or pursue this or pursue that. So in the longer term perspective, I would say, you know, it's not game over. I think he's plenty of opportunities. College in part is to get those foundational skills, get that experience, but also figure out what he enjoys studying. And if he wants to do more, there will be a lot of opportunities to pursue those.
Oh, well, I appreciate, Christine, you joining us. That's given me some interesting perspective. I love that you say that it's not too late. I'm going to have you meet my son, and then you can tell me if it's too late, which would be kind of funny. But you and I have a lot to talk about coming up. So I appreciate you being here on the podcast. That's great.
Okay.
Thank you
so
very much.
Listen, 3.75, first of all, is impressive in my book, right?
And listen, you know what? He will end up with a 4.0 by the end of the year. He's smart.
Right.
He just doesn't have to try all that hard.
Right.
And we're not pushing him toward. And by the way, it's the same thing with sports. It's not just academic. He's an exceptional volleyball player. Yeah. And the club team has asked him, begged him to come play.
Yeah.
And we didn't say no as parents, but I certainly didn't say, oh, this is going to be amazing. I sort of said things like, ooh, well, do you know how much they practice, Kalis? And like, ooh, like, there's a lot of traveling. Like, is that going to be every weekend? Like, okay, if you really want to do that.
Right.
And guess what? Surprise, surprise. He's like, I have to practice every night. I don't know if I want to do that. Okay, we understand. And I'm like, yes, victory.
Right.
Because my world is like, what the hell is club volleyball going to lead to? He's not going to play professional volleyball somewhere in Spain. That's just not going to happen. Because he's not going to be 6'9".
Well, the one thing she did say was the perseverance, the grit. And going to a practice every single day when you're that age is a real pain in the ass.
Yes!
So, yes, of course.
This is my point. But this would be good for him.
No, yeah, exactly. It would be good for him. So maybe you should talk to him about it. Because he's doing something that he doesn't necessarily want to do. And she kind of noted that as being the single thing that's super important outside of going to an Ivy League school.
Okay, so here's the problem, though.
Yeah.
If I'm being, again, I'm looking at this honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want my kid practicing every day after school. I don't want him going places every weekend. I like to do stuff with him every weekend and after school, and we have a great relationship. And I want to go rock climbing, and I want to go water skiing, and we want to go scuba diving, and we do all this. We surf together. But like, so it's like there's a lot of me, and I also don't want to be driving him around all over the place. Right. And I don't even want my wife doing all that stuff because then it affects our relationship. Like, and I see people that drive their kids around every day and practice, and they're driving down to Anaheim for the tournaments, and it's like, there's a lot of selfishness in the way I parent. It comes across not like that because I look like Super Dad with all the cool stuff I do with my kids. But the truth is like, I didn't want him to play club volleyball because I didn't want to be involved in that.
Right.
It's just too much work for me.
Right.
And he didn't want it enough, and so I didn't see the outside gain of it. So am I robbing him of this team focus, like have a paper route and through the snow crap? Yes.
First thing I would say is that you're very self-aware, so I'm going to give you that compliment, that you know that you're doing that. I think that you there's a couple things to think about. One is I think that you need to support him and say, hey, if you want to do it, your mom and I are behind it 100%. And then
said that.
Okay. Then the other thing that's different here is if he was your only child, would it be a different scenario, right? Because you've got three children, you can't have one of them go into volleyball every single night and the other one decides that they want to do something every single night. And right?
I think it'd be worse. I got to be honest. I think it's worse because he's going to go do something else. Right? And it's like, then I have my other kids to play with. You know what I mean? So it's like, if he was my only one, I wouldn't want to share him with anyone. That's my theory. Well, I don't know. I got three brats.
What I'm saying is I think helicopter parenting is a lot easier if you are if you have one kid.
Like, I agree.
And I think that I wonder what the statistics are, if there are, because there's probably not. But people that are helicopter parents are probably have less kids. The more kids you have, how much helicoptering can you do?
Well, listen, I see a lot of parents doing a lot of it.
Yeah.
But it's not always bad. In fact, there's been a lot of books written about the idea of this helicopter pairing, and they call it tiger moms, which is really comes from the Asian education philosophy. And that's why you see sort of the Asians in this country doing exceptionally well, particularly when it comes to education, because culturally they basically sacrifice everything.
Yeah.
And it's the, you know, stereotypical view of the young Asian kid practicing piano or violin every day for hours and hours.
Right.
And turns out they're virtuosos by the time they graduate 4 years early. And there's been a lot of books written about this parenting style and how in the East it is well renowned as something to be proud of, that of how hard you pushed your kids and their kind of achievement. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to argue that it's not working for a lot of that. Now, you can always say, oh, but does it create happy kids and whatever.
Right.
But my next guest is definitely a proponent of that style of parenting. So I want to get her on the phone. I can't believe she's joining us from Singapore. Is that correct, Christian?
That is correct.
Wow.
Yes,
it's like 3:30 in the morning
exactly
and she's willing.
Is,
you know,
yeah.
But that's the thing. She's probably working right now. She's probably training her kids to do other things right now. So let's see if we can get Maya Thea Garden on, the author of Beyond Tiger Moms, East-West Parenting for the Global Age. And then after this, our guest has just arrived. Todd Marinovich is here.
No way.
And I'm very excited. But let's get Maya on here, and let's see if we can get her to explain tiger momming. So I wanted to talk to you about your book. I think it's sort of a fascinating world. I'm struggling with my teenagers to figure out how aggressively to start pushing them towards academic greatness or even athletic greatness. And I think there's a real disconnect between the Eastern and the Western style of parenting, particularly in this new generation. And I wanted to get your take on that.
Sure. And I think actually, you know, parenting is such a cultural act that it is very deeply influenced by our cultures. And you're right. I was very, very surprised when I moved to Singapore at how differently parents approached education and parenting here compared to when I was in the U.S. One thing I've learned from traveling between countries and teaching and parenting in different parts of the world is that there isn't really one way of parenting that's right. But it is very much something that's aligned with the person's culture and values and what the world around you is telling you to do. I don't think there is a prescription or a right answer actually for parenting.
It's an excellent diplomatic answer, but the fact is that the Asian community values education at a wildly high level. And they seem to be doing pretty well educationally right now.
They do very, very well. I think it's a very disciplined culture, right? If you look at the Confucian work ethic and the roots of Confucianism, it's almost seen as a moral imperative to study and to improve yourself. And so definitely there is a very, very strong, deeply rooted value for education. And what's interesting to me in Singapore is that that goes all the way up and down the class ladder. So even your kind of lower socioeconomic strata in Singapore does quite well educationally. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of there's a much narrower range of scores and educational attainments compared to the U.S., where you have huge disparities.
But there's a sacrifice for that in the parenting style, in the sort of relationship with the kids, the time you spend with the kids, the way they feel about you as parents, the role you play is much different when you're a quote-unquote tiger mom in that sense.
Right. I mean, one of the things that's interesting to me here in Singapore is, you know, they use the word kiasu, which is a Singaporean word, which is kind of like a tiger mom, but it also comes with a certain fear or anxiety in it. So the word has these connotations of anxiety that I don't think tiger mom necessarily does. because it is a culture that, you know, they are very competitive and they want their kids to do well. But a lot of that pushing also stems from anxiety, I think, about, you know, about the competition out there, about the way the world is moving.
So I've been sort of trying to figure out if my parenting style sort of is depriving my kids of certain opportunities.
Right.
And we were talking about how, you know, I don't think my kid's going to get into an Ivy League school because I don't push them hard academically. He's certainly not going to play professional sports. I never even pushed him towards that. So I'm wondering, like, do the other cultures feel that they're leaving things on the table by pushing their kids so hard? Are they leaving these relationship elements on the table that we in Western society seem to value more, particularly in this generation?
Right. You know, it's interesting because when I talked to parents in the U.S., when I lived in the U.S., there'd often be a lot of guilt if parents did push kids very hard because they would feel bad about it. They'd feel as though they were somehow, you know, imposing their will on their children. Whereas here in Asia, I feel like it's almost the opposite. When I talk to parents, they would feel bad if they didn't push their kids because they'd feel as though they were abdicating some sort of responsibility to make sure that their kids worked as hard as possible and did as well as possible. And I think the relationship between parent and child is still quite close in Singapore. It's just very different from the way it is in the U.S. And one of the things that many of the parents I interviewed did tell me is that they are trying to be, that this generation of parents is trying harder to be more affectionate, more open with their kids and have communication patterns that are maybe a little bit more westernized in some ways. So yes.
Yeah. And then they'll start to do worse in school.
Yeah.
You know, but I think it's a great question. How much do you push a kid? And for some kids, that pushing can be construed as, you know, in Singapore, because all kids are pushed, kids don't mind being pushed as much because that's just how things are. Whereas in the U.S., I think given how individualistic and independent kids are, they might feel as though they might rebel against it. They might feel as though, you know, their parents are imposing this outside force on them that they aren't comfortable with. So it's very cultural how a child responds to that, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Hi, my name is Rabi. I'm the co-host for today. Nice to meet you. You know, it's really interesting.
Hi, Herbie. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. I think it's really interesting, you know, there's so many studies that talk about so many different things you can do. And as we're talking about the sort of cultural differences, you know, it feels like to me if you're you know, tiger parenting or constantly pushing your kids, that what you give up is sort of that you know, that I guess we'll call it dead time where you don't have anything planned. Right there, but in my household, there's a lot of that time, and where we just sit and watch, you know, America's Funniest Home Videos, or we just totally unplug and relax. And you know, I always think to myself, should we be playing a board game? Should we be practicing baseball? Should we be doing other things? I feel that guilt. But then, you know, Brand, it's really interesting because then you read all these things where, like, if you can, you know, it's super important for your kid to be bored. You know, there's this sort of anti-helicopter parenting movement that's going on, too.
Yeah.
That's like...
Total crock of shit.
Your kid should know how to go into their room, pull out some toys, and have some fun. Or they should know to, you know what, why don't I go to the neighbor's house and see if they want to do something. Like, they should be self-motivating. Yeah. Maya, what do you think?
I think there is something to it in terms of having time to yourself. But again, it depends maybe on if a child is just on social media and video gaming the whole time.
Right.
And that's how they deal with their boredom, then that's maybe not so healthy. But if a child is outside or daydreaming or doing something more creative, then they could get a lot out of that. So I do think that having some downtime is important. And it's good for kids to be able to take initiative a little bit. I think one of the things a lot of the parents I interviewed here and educators here are aware of is that they feel like creativity is inhibited by so much programming and pushing and academic focus. And I do think kids need that time. And also for mental health. You know, we need time outside. We need time to ourselves because there's such a rise in adolescent depression and anxiety. And parental depression and anxiety. So I think sometimes you need that downtime and space for mental health as well.
Well, Maya, I really appreciate you getting up so early to give us a little insight. Your book is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I'm going to post it so everybody can get a copy of it. And I'm excited to sort of reassess my parenting ideas after this insightful podcast.
Well, I really enjoyed talking to you, so thank you.
Thanks, Maya.
Thanks so much, Maya. Nice to meet you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You know, one of the things that stuck with me right there,
yeah,
is if your parents had forced you to go to piano lessons,
mm-hmm,
after school every day,
yep,
for your entire sort of childhood life,
yep,
you would have been annoyed, you'd have been upset, it would have cost you fun social stuff.
Right.
But right now you'd be able to play the piano and play it really well.
Yep.
And at a party, yep, or you're at real screen,
that's,
and there's,
right,
hey guys, come on, let's play the piano, man.
That's right.
And can you do that right now?
No.
Now, if you could go back in time, like, you'd want to play the piano, right?
Yes.
And so, okay. So,
it's funny that you say that. The piano is exactly the instrument that I'd like to play. And my son and my daughter are in piano lessons now, and it's because I wish that I could play.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, and this is where I find now our culture is different, is that when they get at an age where this is not fun anymore and they want to go out and they want to do other things, and making them go and playing the piano is going to cause you grief. It's going to make your relationship with them harder. It's going to make it so you can't do things with them. Are you going to push them to play the piano, knowing that in 20 years it will be such an amazing life skill?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, those are the decisions that we have to make, Grant, as parents. Because, I mean, listen, we come into this as parents having a little bit more wisdom than they do. And at some point, you've got to take that wisdom and make action, you know, take action with it. And you are not doing that. There's stuff that you know that they'll be happy about later, and you're not doing anything about it.
That's right. And okay, I think that our entire culture is doing that a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody talks about that. I think we've been making excuses and having the sort of the idea that parenting, our style of parenting and connecting to them, is better for them because it's creating happier kids and whatnot, because that's really an easier way to do it.
Mm.
It's not difficult as a parent to sort of like have that relationship and move in and out. If your kid's, let's just say, he's a normal kid, you can have that. It's harder to force them to play the piano, yeah, every day after school.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder to force them to study more. It's harder to force them to do all these things,
yeah,
because it affects your relationship. And I think that goes to the core of our generation is just a little more selfish.
Mm-hmm.
We want things that are good for us and fun for us, and parenting to be fun,
yeah,
and engaging. And I love my kids and I love doing fun stuff with them.
Yeah.
And so I choose to rationalize fun stuff with them as the right stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And what's nice is the rest of sort of society is sort of heaping that on me, is like, this is great. You're a great dad.
Yeah.
It's like, I could be doing more. My son is amazing playing the guitar. He learned on YouTube.
Yeah.
I'm not forcing him to take lessons.
Right.
I'm not forcing him to do anything because I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's different and I don't know how it was with your dad, but if my dad said no, there was never any argument.
Yeah,
it was
same
no
here.
And there was never a way out of it.
Right.
Whereas I am a much more balanced with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
I let him make an argument if he wants something.
Right.
I listen to him. I sort of weigh the pros and the cons.
Yeah.
And he knows that I'm very reasonable in that sense.
Yeah.
But here's what's happened. My son has done the same thing I did. He learned how to get what he wants. Now, I train my son to get what he wants by being kind,
mm-hmm,
and nice and reasonable. He doesn't talk back. He doesn't argue. He's figured out the manipulation tools,
right,
against me. And it's that, oh, you know what? Dad doesn't really want to say no for the sake of saying no, so I'm not going to give him reasons to do that.
Right.
And he gets, for the most part, everything he,
yeah,
wants, which, I mean, he's a great kid, so it's working with us.
Right.
And it happened this morning. And I wanted to get your opinion, Christian, on this as well, because I'm dying to hear how you'll deal with this when you get older. Is that, as you know, I have a classic muscle car, a 1969 GTO.
Beautiful car. Beautiful
car, as we'll show it here. Love that car.
Yep.
My son loves that car.
Right.
For the last, you know, 2 years that we've had it, he's been saving money so he can buy a piece of it, on and on.
Right.
He just got his license,
yep,
last week.
Yep, yep.
He asked me this morning. He's got a date on Friday to go,
right,
ice skating. He asked me, Dad, do you think I could take the GTO?
Wow.
It'd be so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know how your dad would react. My,
yeah,
dad would be like, are you kidding me? Absolutely not.
Right.
And that would be the end of that.
Right.
It wouldn't be any point asking,
right,
again, right?
because at the end of the day, it just, I don't know. You just say no. But right. I said, I had to think about it. In my mind, I instantly said no. But I'm trying to come up with the reason, like, okay, so why am I saying no? Just because he shouldn't drive it one time for 20 minutes down the road? Like, that seems a theory.
Mm-hmm.
But how cool would it be to have my 16-year-old son drive that convertible with this girl he's taking on a date, right? Like, so that's where I'm at now.
Yeah.
What should I do?
Interesting. No, I say why not? If he's a good kid, right?
Yes.
Right? Listen, your dad didn't do it all right, and neither did mine. My dad would have said no, and I wouldn't have asked any more questions. And my relationship with my dad, I don't, you know, remember a whole lot of warm and fuzzies. And, you know, and so I don't think that that's the answer either.
Yeah, but look where you are today. Look at our lives.
Please.
Look at our lives, right? Like, you're a well-balanced person. You learned a lot of hardships along the way that made you who you are and stronger. The question is, are you going to position your kids in the same way that you were positioned? I don't know.
Well, it's different, right? My position and their position are very different.
I know, but my 16-year-old, my 13-year-olds, their biggest disappointment is when Wi-Fi is not working in life.
Right.
Right? And that's just the fact of life. Like, I don't put them in positions to be disappointed just because people don't do what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And so when my kids get out into the real world, I think they're going to be nice and balanced and wonderful people and happy, and they know how to have a good time and all that other stuff that I keep saying and that society tells me is good. But really, am I training him what am I missing? What is he missing in life skills that having this type of parenting is doing?
It's a good question. It's a very good question.
Now, I will tell you that our next guest, who just arrived, so I'm very excited to bring him in, He knows what it's like to have a parent who basically guides every moment of every day for one specific goal. Todd Marinovich was a superstar athlete who was trained. Sports Illustrated did an amazing article, and they did a great documentary where he was basically trained from a young age to be the perfect athlete. Never had a ding-dong or ate an Oreo cookie, that kind of thing.
Right.
And he was a spectacular player.
Yep.
But the story goes that when he got into college and the dad sort of chains were off, he went wild.
Yeah.
And it basically took his career down because he wasn't able to make the decisions that he never learned life skills that he could have learned. He learned football skills.
Yeah.
And you need the combination of two. Yeah. So let's bring him in. I'm a big fan of his. Ladies and gentlemen, let's bring in Todd Marinovich. All right, Todd, welcome to the studio. Thanks you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Brent.
I have to say, a little closer to the mic.
Yes.
I have to say, I followed your career.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in school trying to play Canadian football, you were in school crushing football. It was really exciting. So I'm really appreciative that you came down to talk to me.
It's a pleasure.
So one of the things that you're known for is the crazy sort of parenting regime that you went through that was basically like how to craft a superstar athlete.
Correct.
And I looked at that and be like, wow, I wonder if I should do that with my kid, or I wish my dad had done that with me because maybe I could have played professional sports and my dad would have, you know, pushed me to anything.
No, you don't.
No, I don't.
No. Absolutely not. You know, my dad was a coach, a trainer, but not a dad.
Right.
And I'm not raising my kids in any way, shape, or form like that. And I have to relearn skills because we learn from what we see.
Right.
And I have two little ones. They're not as far along as yours. I have a 7-year-old son and a 5-year-old daughter. And what an experience. It
now,
is beautiful.
Let me ask you some of the
I do
of
not proof. Know what I'm doing.
You'll figure it out. It's not that difficult.
Okay.
You just go. I mean, everybody's figuring it out as they go. But, okay, so let me ask you a couple of pivotal questions for me. If your dad wasn't the way he was, if he didn't push you the same way he did, if he didn't train you, if he didn't sort of quote unquote feed you all of the stuff you needed, would you have been able to make the NFL?
God, you know what? Nobody's ever asked me that.
Nice.
That's a good question. And you know, when I think about my first response would be no. And would I have played major college football? I think so. Because I had the skill set. I love the game. I come from a family. My uncle was a quarterback, and so I was around football my whole life. I was in training camps when I was young, and I, you know, I was brought up in it. So right. That's all I knew. But the overboard helicopter, as you call it, is just not healthy.
Right.
Just look at me.
Listen. I guess the question begs, though, is like, is that more of an internal, personal thing? Like, did that create that for you? Or would you have found some of the struggles you found regardless of that upbringing and the pushing towards it?
Well, when you did your opening and you were talking about your dad, how he let you make mistakes, that was a crucial part of my upbringing where I wasn't allowed to make any decisions. So when I went to USC for the first time, it was all bets are off, and yeah. Who knows what's going to happen, because I'm in charge. And that, I mean, really emotionally, I'm 11, and I'm playing with men and trying to make adult decisions, and they just didn't turn out so hot.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I think that's interesting that without that push, that extra layer, someone with obviously amazing physical talent and the ability, you might not have nurtured enough of that ability to make it to the highest level.
Correct. And now I'm dealing with my son, Baron, and he didn't want to touch a ball until he turned 5.
Right.
And so I just, that's fine with me. And then I started having these thoughts of my experience in school of, God, is he going to be the kid that nobody picks?
Oh, yeah, I've been there.
God, and that affected me. I was always the guy that was picking the team.
Right.
So I was picking those guys just because I felt for that. And so now that Baron loves handball, I play with him weekly, and it is so much fun. And it really doesn't matter what he wants to do. I'm supportive. I don't know how to be a parent, but one thing I am learning is putting my phone away when it's their time, because all they want is to be with me and really be present with them. And it is it's an experience that you shouldn't miss if you're...
But let me ask you this.
Yes.
Now, because you're going to face a little bit of the stuff that I'm facing.
Uh-huh.
Is that if Baron shows some natural ability,
mm-hmm.
you come from a football background, you understand the game, your family history, your connection, all of these things, he may be big, he may have all the attributes.
Right.
But because of your background and what you've been through and what you're planning to do with him in the parenting style, you won't be pushing him.
No.
You're almost guaranteeing that he doesn't have a shot at the NFL. That he's not going to get the same shot you had.
Correct. And I am so happy about that.
Right?
I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
But listen, Tom Brady makes it look pretty good. There's lots of NFL guys that make it look like a great life. Right.
But, you know, Rabih made a good point to you about the real important part of this, of the education and sports is the discipline of doing stuff you don't want to do.
Right.
It's not the result. And because what I'm finding in my life today is that football and athletics have given me some tools that really work in life about being a team, just a teammate, or being selfless. And I could go on and on about the way the parallels of life and sports. And so I don't care what my daughter does, but I want them to do athletics. I really think it's important.
And so will you transfer that same sort of desire from athletics to academics? Because really they're kind of similar.
Yeah.
If you push your kids to academics in the same
Correct.
Way, you know, making the NFL is just as hard as probably getting into Harvard
Yep.
for a kid. And so what I was saying earlier, and to our admissions sort of counselor, is that, like, well, if I'm not pushing him like a football dad, or if I'm not pushing him like a Tiger mob, like, he's not getting into an Ivy League school, because it's not something they can really do on their own unless they're born exceptional, you know?
Right. And I don't think I think it's the experience of going to college. I don't think the Ivy League is the only route. I think it's important to stress but not push the importance of spending the time and the discipline in the structure of studying or training, whatever it is, and the balance of the two, that's the key.
Right.
Because when you get out of balance, that's when you become unhealthy and kids start acting out.
Right. Now, one thing that you said that really sort of stuck with me was the idea that you weren't allowed to make mistakes growing up. You
were decisions, so, not so much mistakes.
Right.
Yeah.
So you were sort of regimented and guided and so a little bit sheltered from what the real world was going to hand you.
Mm-hmm.
You get into what the real world hands you and it's like, oh, man, this tastes delicious. And it's just on from that moment.
Correct.
So that's very visual and easy to understand from what you went through. But my question is that when you look at the way you're dealing with your kids, are you positioning them in a little bit of the same way by sheltering them from disappointment, some hardship, some emotional sort of stress because dad's always there, dad's always accepting, dad helps every time, you can always count on dad, and like they probably get a lot of the things they want if they act like good kids, right? And that, do you feel like there's a little bit of that when they get into the real world, maybe they're going to be in for a little bit of a Todd Maridovich moment where it's like, whoa, things out here aren't the same as I thought.
Well, what I want to do is really stay out of the way.
Right.
I think they're going to be fine if I don't try to control anything and really be honest with them and share with them what I've experienced. I think that's really important because kids know what truth is. They feel it and they watch. And so I'm trying to just be the best person I can be so they have a role model because I think we're winning if we're present. I think, you know, I'm in recovery and I see a lot of young people come in and it's not a surprise because they grew up without a parent.
Right.
And that is what I don't want. And so I think we're winning if we're just there.
And listen, that's a kind of a low bar, but it's sometimes it's hard to even be that, like... I totally get that.
Yeah, I agree.
Let me ask you, what's your biggest regret?
My biggest regret, that's an easy one, is not getting into recovery sooner.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, because now that I am and I have worked on issues and stuff that I don't need to self-medicate anymore. And that's all I was doing.
Right.
And I wasted a lot of years doing that. And I am just grateful that I'm on the planet and I don't spend too much time regretting that unless I'm asked because I'm really in the moment and get to enjoy life. I have my own business. I do art. What a great... I thought I had a cool job before playing
right.
a game. Art beats it. I paint pictures.
Nothing wrong with that, right?
No.
Yeah.
I love it. I get to do it with my kids. They're there. It's a beautiful thing. And so if it wasn't one regret, it was just not coming around, awakening sooner.
And after all this, you know, I had my ups and downs with my dad growing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a pretty tough guy in the sense that he was, you know, he was in the Navy. And so he had a very rigid system of when he said no, that was the end of it. There was no discussion.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. And he wasn't like a soft, like cuddly,
that generation
emotional,
wasn't.
Not at all.
No.
And so... But, you know, we, after I became, you know, I say as I got older, he got wiser kind of thing. So, and our relationship, turned great. How is your relationship with your dad after all of this? Is there?
It's fabulous.
It's all come back together.
Yes. And, you know, that there was a film done, the Maridovich Project, which really captured our relationship in a way that no other media has. And about that point, he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. So I am getting, he's a different guy. He still knows who I am. But I take care of him. He lives with me and it's great. It's what I want to do. I wouldn't want to just tuck him away somewhere. I get to spend time with him and, it's all about what I'm finding life is. It's about relationships.
Yeah.
With their, you know, it's a relationship with my probation officer is good. It's
good, yes.
That used to be, I mean, every area. The only point of bringing her up was I used to think they were out to get me.
Right.
That is just not the case.
Now it's much better.
Yes. But,
you know, and that's an interesting thing as I try to look at this from both sides of the sort of spectrum. is that I feel like, so your dad was an example of the a little too hard over, or a lot too hard over.
Yes.
But some of the major accomplishments in sort of sporting or even academics or science or whatever, they can point to parents who pushed them very hard.
Yes.
And my parents were okay with me being upset with them or mad at them or not liking them if it was best for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't seem to do a lot of that in my parenting. I don't know how I would do that because I haven't really had to come across that very much.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if it's okay if your dad had dialed it back just a little.
Yeah, who knows? There was just there was no dialing it back at all.
But if he had gone at 80% of that, pushed you and all the skills and all the other things, but let you have some of that peace, where would your life be today? And even though some of the yelling and all the hard things would have still been there, clearly, even after what you've been through, there's a bond that comes back together with your parents after that childhood, even if it is rough.
Yes.
And so, you know, maybe it's not so bad to have kids that sort of like have a tougher run on the way up.
That's a good question.
No, I don't know. I mean, the truth is, it's probably not going to happen for my kids.
But. I have a question for Todd.
Yes. Go ahead.
Todd. If your son Baron, right?
Yes.
If Baron said to you tomorrow, he's like, Dad, I want to play in the NFL and I want to do everything that it takes for me to get to that place, what would your response be? What would your thought be?
Gosh, I don't see him saying that. Let's pretend.
Right, let's pretend. Maybe in 3 years he says that to you. Dad, that's it. I know what I want. I watch these games. I watch Tom Brady. I want that life.
God, I don't know. I would be supportive.
Yeah.
You know, and
but that wouldn't do it. Being supportive would not get him there. You know that, right?
But you know what I would think? I think because I don't want to come off like I'm an expert, but however, I do know some shortcuts in that area. So I think maybe I could direct him in a way that, who knows, you know, you never know. And all we really want to do is give our kids the best chance.
Right.
And then let the cards fall where they may.
But I see, I think you would have the same response that I had when Kalis wanted to play volleyball. Oh, okay, Kalis, club volleyball. You know how many times they practice? You know, it's like, that's all you'd have to start saying is like, ooh, you're going to have to live somewhere else. You're going to have to travel. And the kid would be like, oh, that's a lot of work.
Brent, I think I would be a little firmer than you.
Maybe. You're like, no, don't play. No.
You know what? I think that Todd doing the 80% thing versus the 100 thing with his son, I think his son can make it to the NFL.
I think so, too.
At 80% of Todd.
Don't deprive your kid of an NFL career.
I don't see it just in Baron's athleticism. Now, my daughter, Coco, she now could be on that volleyball tour, I think, with some work.
Yeah. There you go. There you see, go. I've always thought
so now
that,
what do I do? Do I just roll a volleyball to her? Or put a tennis racket in her hand? I don't know what to do. Because she's not going to pick it up without it.
I have the same thing with my daughter. Right? She's 13. She's very athletic. She could easily be playing water polo with the way she swims.
Yes.
And she's not small, like dainty. She's tough and very, like, very athletic. But she doesn't want to leave the house or do anything. So unless I literally forced her to do it, she wouldn't do it. And so I'm sort of like, she gets lots of experience doing other stuff, and we have fun times together, you know? And it's like, I justify why I'm not forcing her to play team sports, because that would be unpleasant for me. That's the truth. I mean, no one talks like that, but that is the truth. That's why I do it.
Your honesty is refreshing, let me tell you.
I agree.
That's the way, and you know, and so I've accepted the fact that I'm not going to force her to do anything because I don't want her to be mad at me and stuff like that. So that's just the way that, you know, anyways, that's my parenting style. And I'm having a little bit of, I'm not having trouble. Yeah, I'm having a little trouble with it because as I look at these kids, they seem super happy and all that stuff. I'm just wondering, like, could I be doing more? From a parent perspective, not a relationship perspective, but from a parent, a guide, an overseer, someone who's supposed to build them for the next part of the world. They're great kids. I'm good at making great kids and happy kids.
Yeah.
I don't know about the adult version of that.
I would really support and encourage team sports, without a doubt. And that my kids are now at the age where I'm going to incorporate that into their lives, because I really think with balance and not over the top parenting, just the, like I said, the discipline of going to practice and then the relationships that you get to have, then you can go to school. Like, I was extremely shy, and Baron's the same way. That's just going to open up social activities. So,
well, I think you'll have the parenting thing down. You have a good roadmap
to look at. So
thanks, Brant.
I'm really excited that you came to visit us. It was a great honor to talk to you, and I appreciate it a lot.
Oh, you're welcome. It was fun. Right on, guys.
Wow, Todd Marinovich.
Super interesting.
Yeah, like, I mean, listen, I actually think he's going to be okay as a parent, you know?
Yeah.
He's gone through such hardships and whatnot that he's going to be a good thing. But I really am still a little stuck on the idea that his kid will not have a shot at the NFL.
Yeah.
And his kid might have been able to.
Yeah, he's but got
his
the genes.
His experience is going to be like, there's no way I'm letting this kid do this, right? Mm. And so that's a decision as a parent we make.
Yeah.
And that I'm starting to come to grips with, which is very strange.
Yeah. Really, really interesting. I mean, I'll tell you, all these experts, the one thing I learned for sure is that everybody's doing it differently.
Yeah.
And that there's no real formula for success.
But I do think society sets a little bit more of the tone every generation.
Yeah.
Our generation's parents dealt with things much differently. True. The emotion that they had, the way they connected, the value they thought that they were providing as parents is different than our generation, and I think it'll be different than our kids' generation.
Yeah, but you know what you have to take into consideration here is, one, that we're in Los Angeles. There's sort of a you know, hippy-dippy lean here. Mm-hmm. You know, let your kids be who they are and let them grow into this stuff. Two, there's a certain socioeconomic status that plays into this as well.
Yes.
Right? I think that, you know, people across this country are still raising their kids the way that you and I were raised.
Yeah.
I think that's still going on a lot more than you think. I think the parent groups that you're around and I'm around, it's not going on as much because it's a different situation. So just want to make sure
that's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. One of my friends always said that one of the greatest gifts his parents gave him was the gift of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that my parents gave me the gift of poverty.
Yeah.
We weren't poor growing up.
Right.
But my parents made us feel like we were.
Right.
And they certainly made us feel as kids as we were because it certainly wasn't ours, anything they had.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't give my kids that gift.
Interesting, right?
Because not only can I not give them that gift just because of the sort of our lifestyle, but I can't give them that gift emotionally because I'm not prepared to have them suffer for learning that lesson.
Yeah.
Whereas my parents were quite happy to have us suffer learning the value of a dollar and learning how you don't get something unless you figure out a way to earn it.
Right.
And that's interesting. Yeah. All right, so let's get to the why I'm not what I learned section and close this up today, Rabi. After all we've gone through, what have you learned today?
I have learned that for sure, the one thing that I've learned clearly is that I need to help my kids learn to be more persistent. That was a jewel that I knew already, but when Christine mentioned that, it was sort of it crystallized for me.
Mm.
And you know, this, whoever you are, wherever you are in the country, whatever your socioeconomic status is, I think that lesson is important for all parents.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. So here's why I'm not a good parent. What I learned today: the truth is, I'm a selfish parent, and you have to pick your battles. And I choose the battles that are the easiest for me, that I enjoy the most. And I justify that with believing and rationalizing that it's the best for my kids. And society is helping me with that. And the truth is, I don't know 100%, but you can only do so much. And don't get me wrong, there are tremendous benefits to having that kind of relationship with the kids, the way they're growing up, the way my kids behave and stuff. That's going to be amazing.
They're great kids.
They are great kids, and I'm really proud of what I do with them.
Yeah.
They've developed certain skills and social understandings. That's all great.
Yep.
But there is a cost to that, and I kind of have to accept that there are some things that I've made a decision on, and that's sort of the way it is. There'll be things that they're great at in life, and there'll be things that they're less sort of equipped than others, and that's fine. At the end of the day, my parents and their parents, they grew up with sacrifice mixed with suffering, and that's how you got to reap the rewards of life later. Now, we live in an instant gratification society.
Yeah.
And this self-gratification is so big. Now, you and I, we worked and we earned our way to feel gratification first and instant gratification. The millennials, they feel like they are owed it.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like that's what they belong to it. They deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
Our kids' generations, my kids' generations, they won't feel entitled to it because it just is the way they are. Happiness, self-worth is just normal. It's like air for them.
Right.
Maybe that's good. Maybe that's bad. It's tough to say. But I think if everybody looks at their parenting style a little bit more honestly, Mm-hmm. Like you're saying, like you got to focus on them being persistent. And don't justify your need to be happy with your kids and enjoy what they're doing as always being the right parenting thing. Mm-hmm. I think maybe that's better.
Yeah. And you have to impart some of your wisdom, Brant. You have to.
I do. I get it, and I will. You know.
You do.
They're
you
nice.
Do.
They're great. They're well balanced, and I'm happy with that. So I'm gonna try a little harder. But that's sort of where I'm at.
We could talk about this forever.
I know, but it's amazing. That's it. You know what I will close with?
Yeah.
My kids are not going to be the next Steve Jobs, because it requires some real intense, sort of awful drive to do that. And I think the world needs more Steve Jobs. So if you're the type of parent that pushes your kid relentlessly, I kind of thank you for that, because I can't be that.
I don't know.
All right, this is the Why I'm Not podcast. This was Why I'm Not a Good Parent. Rabi,
you want social media?
You want anybody to join you? Or?
Thank you for having me. I'm good.
I love that about you.
I'm good.
Well, I like to be found. What about you, Christian? You got social media?
Oh, you can find me at ChristianDMZ. I can always be found.
Yes.
DMZ.
I'm at whyimnot.com and all formats of at Brant Pinvidic. So please join us. Until next time.
You've been listening to the Why I'm Not podcast with your host, Brant Pinvidic. For more on this episode, upcoming episodes, or more from our podcast guests, visit whyimnot.com and subscribe for exclusive content, giveaways, and all the latest happenings. And for even more content, visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I shut them down. Shut them down. Shut them down. Shut them down. Shut them down.